You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition, me, Justine Moss, and a very good morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks again for joining us here in Singapore. Let's start off, before we get into any domestic politics, with, of course, the death of the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip. And tributes have really been, you know, coming in from all corners of the world, and, of course, the US as well.
Yes, and especially from here in the United States. The news broke just after 7 o'clock in the morning here on the East Coast on Friday morning. And as a result, the major television networks scrapped their planned breakfast time programs and immediately broke in and announced the news that Buckingham Palace had disclosed in Britain. And that led to a flood of tributes, of course, in the UK, led by Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the political leaders there. And here in the United States, from the White House, President Biden put out a written statement initially saying of the Duke of Edinburgh, he saw our world change dramatically and repeatedly. And he cited the Duke's public service during World War II, his 73 years alongside the Queen, and his entire life in the public eye. And then later in the day, as President Biden was preparing to meet with his economic advisors, he began by making a verbal tribute to the Duke of Edinburgh, describing him as a heck of a guy and saying that he admired the devil out of him for his steadfastness throughout so many decades by the side of the Queen, advancing the interests of Britain and the Commonwealth. And we saw absolutely fulsome tributes being paid to the Duke of Edinburgh from former presidents, particularly Barack Obama, putting out a statement on behalf of himself, and Michelle Obama. He said when he first met Prince Philip, he and the Queen had already been on the world stage for more than half a century, welcoming leaders like Churchill and Kennedy, Mandela and Gorbachev to London. As two Americans unaccustomed to palaces and pomp, we didn't know what to expect. Barack Obama continued, we shouldn't have worried. The Queen and Prince Philip immediately put us at ease with their grace and generosity, turning a ceremonial occasion into something far more natural, even comfortable. It was our first introduction to the man behind the title, and in the years since, our admiration for him has only grown. And I think what's so interesting about this statement is that you've got to remember it comes just a matter of weeks after the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle, in that explosive interview on American television, accused the royal family of racism. And yet here are Barack and Michelle Obama saying that Prince Philip, in their words, showed the world what it meant to be a supportive husband to a powerful woman. Through his extraordinary example, he proved that true partnership has room for both ambition and selflessness, all in service of something greater. Also notable today, a very fulsome tribute to Prince Philip from former President Donald Trump, speaking on behalf of himself and his wife Melania, the former First Lady. He called the Duke of Edinburgh a man who embodied the noble soul and proud spirit of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth. This is an irreplaceable loss for Great Britain and for all who hold dear our civilization. Prince Philip defined British dignity and grace. He personified the quiet reserve, stern fortitude, and unbending integrity of the United Kingdom. That's former President Donald Trump, who, of course, has his own roots personally in Scotland and has long been an admirer of the British royal family, going into, I think it's fair to say, uncharacteristic style in offering that tribute to the Duke of Edinburgh.
And very sad news. Simon, let's switch to President Joe Biden's budget now. First budget, and it's sort of meeting a bit of criticism. He's touched on things like climate change, underperforming schools as well, but it's drawn a bit of criticism over military spending.
Yeah, there's something in there for everyone to like, but there's also something in there for everyone to hate, Justine. I feel like every week when you and I talk, we're talking about fresh efforts by President Biden to secure trillions of dollars from Congress. You know, we've had the $1.9 trillion economic stimulus, the $2 trillion infrastructure plan that he wants Congress to back. Now, this is his budget for 2022. It comes in at $1.5 trillion. It envisages a 16% increase in spending on domestic programs. That would amount to about 3.3% of gross domestic product. It includes $769 billion worth of non-defense programs. And of course, lots of that is rooted in fresh expenditure focused on public health, particularly an infusion of new cash for the Centers of Disease Control down in Atlanta as it struggles to deal with the impacts of COVID-19. But then we get on to the issue of defense spending. And the budget is proposing $753 billion in national defense spending. That is an increase of only 1.7%, which is substantially less than Republican hawks in Congress would like to see flooding into the Pentagon and some of its favorite suppliers. But it's also far more than progressive members on the left of the Democratic Party want to see. You've got people like Bernie Sanders, who now, of course, chairs the Senate Budget Committee, calling for a 10% cut in Pentagon spending. And in terms of the anger that some of this is sparking among Republicans, it's also worth bearing in mind that, you know, it's only been a few days since President Biden proposed increasing corporation tax in the United States from 21% to 28% to pay for his infrastructure program. That's something to which Republicans are absolutely implacably opposed, because they do not believe that the infrastructure program should be paid for out of higher taxes on American businesses. Now they've got an opportunity also to dig their teeth into this proposal for the 2022 budget from the White House. And they are making it absolutely clear that on a variety of fronts, they're going to fight it. And, you know, there's so much division on Capitol Hill over this within the various parties that that's what's going to make this quite difficult for President Joe Biden. In a 50-50 Senate, he's going to have to keep every single Democrat on side or attract some Republican support to get this done. And even more so than the economic stimulus measure that we've already seen passed into law, or even, I think, than the infrastructure bill, this one is going to require an enormous amount of fancy footwork up on Capitol Hill.
Simon, let's switch to transport now. Boeing has some more problems. Quite a number of countries actually are being told to ground the planes.
Yes, a disclosure from Boeing that came early on Friday here in the United States, a sudden instruction being sent to 16 airlines. The company didn't identify them, although we know from reporting today that they definitely include the carriers United, Southwest, and American here in the United States. And they're being told to ground some of their Boeing 737 MAX jets in order to carry out inspections of the electrical systems on board. This seems to pertain to concerns about whether those electrical systems are sufficiently grounded. And I think it's fair to say this is absolutely the last thing the 737 MAX or Boeing or the airlines needed, given that those planes have only recently been cleared to get back into the skies after they were grounded for 2 years following those two deadly incidents involving 737 MAX jets that cost nearly 350 lives. And this is only going to rattle a fresh public confidence in the 737 MAX and also in the Federal Aviation Administration here in Washington. The company says it's working with the FAA on this issue to try and make sure that everything is okay and correct any problems that arise. But this raises fresh questions again for whether the Federal Aviation Administration has been too quick to give Boeing the go-ahead and airlines the go-ahead to put those planes back in the sky. And I think it certainly is going to be alarming to those travelers who have already been choosing to avoid the 737 MAX and will be likely to continue making that choice once this is behind Boeing and those planes are once again back in the air.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition with me, Justine Moss, and I'm speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, just staying with transport, Singapore, U.S. exploring ways to revive air travel, and of course, amid this pandemic, including vaccination certificates.
Yes, this is a big deal between Singapore and the United States. Both countries, of course, very anxious to see travel return to normal. It's interesting that Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg within Joe Biden's cabinet was briefing reporters by chance at the White House today, shortly after his conversation with Minister Ong Ye Kung, the Singaporean transportation minister, and he was expressing his desire to get American travelers on the move again. And this conversation between the two transportation ministers is intended to deepen bilateral cooperation in the transportation sector specifically in terms of finding ways of making it safe for the two countries' travelers to head to each other's destinations as soon as is practical, given the COVID-19 crisis. The vaccination passport issue remains a complicated one here in the United States because the Biden administration this week came out against any form of federal vaccination passport. They are going to leave it to private companies, including airlines, to decide what level of documentation to require from travelers. But the focus of the conversation also was very intensively on climate change, because, as you know, Joe Biden has moved the climate change issue to the front burner, not just of transportation policy, but of the government more broadly here in the United States. So they're talking about working together on advancing the development of sustainable aviation fuels, other clean technologies, including advancing electric vehicles and the infrastructure to support the production of additional electric vehicles. So I think the fact not only that this conversation is happening between the United States and Singapore is important, but also the fact that it's dwelling on that climate change issue as well means that it's absolutely in the wheelhouse of the Biden administration, and I think will be looked on by the White House with considerable approval, given the primacy that the climate change issue appears to have taken in those conversations.
Simon, there's been some tragic shootings this year already, you know, in the US. So now President Joe Biden is cracking down on homemade guns, also known as ghost guns.
Yeah, these are guns that are sold in kits, and as a result of that, they don't have any serial numbers on them because, you know, each bit of the gun will not have the same serial number because they're often being made from multiple different kits. And Joe Biden, as part of the executive orders that he issued on guns this week, said enough of that. These so-called ghost guns need to come under federal regulations and guidelines to make them harder simply to acquire and use. I think it's worth making the case, the point, first of all, that, you know, these moves that Joe Biden signed are pretty limited because his powers to regulate guns personally are pretty limited. And he's pushing for Congress to embrace an assault weapons ban. But he knows there's absolutely no chance of that happening because of that 50-50 split in the U.S. Senate that I was talking about. And, you know, it was just extraordinary. The night before Joe Biden made his announcement here, five people were killed, plus the gunman, in a shooting incident in South Carolina. Hours after Joe Biden made his announcement, there was an incident of mass gun violence that only took one life but left several others hospitalized in Texas. It is, as President Biden said, an epidemic a blemish on America's national character and, as he put it, a national embarrassment. But once again, the world is witnessing that there just simply isn't the political will on Capitol Hill to do anything about it. And so, you know, the flag at the White House that was only just raised from having been lowered to honor the victims of the Boulder shooting in Colorado, you know, how long will it be fluttering up high before there is another incident that leads to it being lowered once again? It really continues to be politically an intractable problem here.
Simon, let's just close with the markets. Gosh, S&P 500 and the Dow climbing for a third day and closing at record highs.
Yeah, big day on the markets. Let's look at the numbers. The S&P 500 closed up just over 0.75 percentage point. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up almost 0.9%, and the NASDAQ up 0.5 percentage point. But that was enough to give the markets winning streak at the end of the week. This has been the longest winning streak the markets have enjoyed since October. Tech stocks particularly did well at the end of this particular week of trading. Twitter was up 12% for the week. Apple was up 8.1% for the week. The jobs report last week indicated that unemployment had fallen to a pandemic low. There was a little bit of nervousness when new unemployment claims came out here on Thursday. They were slightly higher than analysts had anticipated. But more broadly, the market, I think, was buoyed by the decision of the International Monetary Fund in its new World Economic Outlook, which came out in the middle of the week, to revise its global growth estimates up to 6% for the year. That's 0.5 percentage point higher than its earlier forecasts. And it's forecasting 4.4% growth for 2022, all of which pleased the markets. The vaccine rollout in the United States continues to move apace. There are some concerns on Wall Street about a drop-off in availability of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and pressure on the company to meet the contractual obligations that it has with the U.S. government. But President Biden was again talking this week about the possibility of Americans being able to celebrate July the 4th and Independence Day with some semblance of normalcy. All of that, I think, keeping the markets feeling pretty confident as this particular week ended.
Simon, as always, thank you so much for talking to us here in Singapore and keeping us updated on what's happening over there.
Thanks a lot, Justine. Talk tomorrow.
Speaking there with us, Simon Marks, our U.S. Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for listening to Simon Marks Reporting. And if you like what you heard, click the subscribe button and come back soon for more. And I'd love it if you'd give me a review. Those can be hugely helpful in spreading the word. Thanks a lot. More from me soon.